This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. To No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And my name is Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And welcome, welcome, dear listeners, to our Workshop of Terror, where we take reports of the worst, most terrible ideas that humanity has had and try to turn them into, if this was a good movie, if this was a good book, if this was a good comic book, if this was a good Zoe trope, what would it look like? What would it feel like?
A good story.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you guys both doing today? Are you excited to take a walk on the wild side?
I'm a little bit nervous to bring you into the living hell that I have for you both today.
No.
Oh, joy. Hooray.
All right, well, let's live a little. What have you got for a sec for a first bad idea?
Please let me escort you both to theguardian.com. Link in the show notes for anybody who would like to see the rusty pictures of 4 years
rusty,
at sea.
You say.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. I may know this story.
Four years at sea, now just meters from shore. Quote,
yeah.
Living hell. Of stranded UAE ship.
Oh, no.
That's right. It's horrible.
Five seafarers are stuck in limbo on a beached tanker after a long, terrifying ordeal of abandonment. Tourists are more accustomed to seeing kite surfers or kayaks off the idyllic coast of Umm Al Quwain in the United Arab Emirates. But today, they have gathered on sun loungers to sip coffee and gaze at the unusual sight of a 5,000-ton oil tanker grounded on the sand. For the crew inside the Panama-flagged MT Iba, however, being grounded on the beach marks another harrowing chapter in an almost four-year ordeal at sea.
Jesus.
Oh, man. I was going to make a Suez Canal joke, but now I'm not.
Oh, no.
No, this is...
Maybe worse.
Certainly worse, yeah, for the people involved. Like, less of a, like, global economy downer, but yeah.
Personally, it's one of the worst cases of seafarer abandonment to come to light since that of Captain Payan Swaminath, whose 18-month plight on the MV, I'm just going to keep butchering these names, Azermor. There's a Q in there. Cargo ship off the coast of the UAE, which was highlighted by The Guardian in 2019. Abandoned by the vessel's owner, their wages unpaid for 32 months. The five-person crew of the $4 million Iba are in limbo. If they leave the ship, they will lose their claim to the hundreds of dollars owed to them. Nay Win, the 53-year-old chief engineer from Myanmar, who was contracted to work for the ship for a year, 1 year in 2017, says the crew have endured, quote, terrible suffering and are desperately worried about their families. Quote, I cannot send wages to support my family. My children cannot study. They cannot eat. They have to borrow money. Win, whose wife Nang Ma, daughter Imat Man, 17, and son Luin Mo Ong, 21, live in a country in the midst of a military coup, says, quote, I'm worried for my family about COVID-19 and the political situation. I told them, stay at home, don't go outside. What began as a normal seafaring job turned into a, quote, living hell, the men say, after the tanker's owner, Alco Shipping, once one of the UAE's largest shipping firms, ran into financial difficulty and stopped paying salaries almost 3 years ago. Since then, they have been forced to rely on charities for food and water. Speaking to The Guardian via WhatsApp, Win says he had to cancel university education for his children and cannot afford medical bills for his daughter who has heart problems.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrible.
Wynn and Riyasat Ali, 52, a second engineer from Pakistan, have been on board since July 2017. Manchan Sikh, 26, cook from India, joined in late 2018, while Vinay Kumar, 31, another second engineer, and Nirmal Singh Bora, 22, both from India, joined in late 2019. In January, the vessel, which is almost out of fuel, broke two anchors in rough seas at Al Hamira port. Yeah, it's like one thing after another.
Yeah, like what could keep getting, how could this keep getting worse?
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
The crew spent a terrifying 12 hours as the EBA listed an angle of 45 degrees and began drifting in the busy waters of the Gulf before finally running around on the sand meters from the beach. I informed the owner the anchor chain could break any time, but he does not care, says Wynn. We've seen hell during this voyage, Kumar, a father of two, says. Every day we prayed. It was our only hope, he told The National, a UAE newspaper. The crew are owed $230,000 US in unpaid wages, the seafarers say. Alco Shipping was blacklisted by the Indian government in 2018 due to abandonment cases. If the crew sets foot on land, they risk being detained for not having the right documents. Wynn's passport, which expired while he was at sea, remains with his former employer. And
oh, course, Jesus, even yeah, worse. Yeah,
that's so much.
And with a military crew at home, it is unclear how he will get a new one. Furthermore, international law prohibits ghost ships at sea without a crew because they are a safety hazard.
Of course. Yeah.
Cases for seafarer abandonment are at a record high, exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic, the International Maritime Organization, IMO, has said. Hotspots for abandonment are the Middle East and Asia, with the UAE top of the list in 2020, followed by China, Taiwan, Turkey, and Italy. Liberia, Malta, and Panama were the flag states with the most cases last year, IMO and International Labor Organization data sheet showed. Skip to the end of this article where somebody who has taken over the operations of Alco Shipping, Saeed Waqar Hassan, in the absence of his brother, the ship's owner, Saeed Hassan, who was imprisoned in 2017 for financial crimes. In his own words, I'm trying to solve the problem, Waqar tells The Guardian. I feel sympathy for the crew, but my hands are tied. There's no money in Alco Shipping. It was made bankrupt. He says it's complicated. The EBA is mortgaged to the bank. There are so many outstanding debts. The crew, the salaries are piling up, but we have one buyer for the EBA. The buyer is willing to pay the crew $142,000 in owed salaries plus $8,000 in reparation costs, he says, but it's unclear if the seafarers will accept. The vessel is worth $4 million, Waqar says, but its debt to the port authority, banks, and others amount to $1.95 million. The Guardian has approached the UAE Federal Transport Authority for comment. And with that nightmare, I put 10 minutes on the clock.
There's just so many bad ideas in there. We have an absurdity of them.
And it's, and like, this is one of these cases where it's tough because someone will probably make a movie based on this. Just a straight retelling of this, and it will win Oscars. It'll have like amazing acting roles, and it'll be like very heart-wrenching.
And it'll be sort of globetrotting because we'll probably be with the crew most of the time, but see what's going on with the government, with Alco Shipping, and with all that as well.
Castaway meets Life of Pi minus the animals. Boom. Like, it sounds like a great high concept movie right there, even if it's like the bummer of the year.
It opens with the brother like walking through his empty mansion right before getting walked off to jail.
Right. And you've, you know, got the family back home and the daughter with a heart condition. And like, yeah, there's a lot going on here. But I don't think it is for us to create that straight retelling, nor do I particularly want to.
No, it, like, you know, it would take like a mountain of research to do that properly.
Yes. Yeah.
So perhaps the way to do it is to supersize it. So let's say that, for example,
I was going to say, are we going to space?
Let's say, for example, that there are some people and a crew of maybe six of them. And they have gone to another planet, any one of them, maybe Mars, just to pick one planet.
Sure, sure. Just to pick a planet. It's close by.
And while they're there, all of a sudden there's a dust storm and they have to abort their mission, which bums them all out. However, much to their horror, one of them gets left. No, I'm kidding. With this straight ripoff of The Martian. But yeah, but no, but I think that kind of something that is like a crew is marooned in space. The most intuitive version of it is something where it's a universe where faster than light travel exists. But it can be very dangerous to get stuck in the middle of it because, you know, like kind of like, you know.
Right. If you come out of hyperspace too early.
Then exactly. Like the search and rescue effort all of a sudden has like light years to look for you.
Your life support system does not last that long.
Before we go exactly. That far into the future, do we not want to do the like Green Mars project where the fake the Elon Musk replacement character like ends up in hot water and they just don't have the liquid assets to make the liquid fuel necessary to get people home? And you just like have that much more analogous, not so distant future, like 2035, where you just have people who are stuck on Mars.
Say more about what by Green Mars, just because I'm not sure.
Oh, just the idea that is just trying to turn Mars into a verdant garden.
Oh, like terraforming it?
Yes, as I think the current plan is.
Possibly. But okay, so in that version of it, whoever the owner is would be there with them?
That is unclear. I think there's a world where they crash a race car. There's a world where they're there and the businesses like are more scam than not and it gets found out while they're on Mars and that's a problem for getting home. But you think something, Sarah.
Well, I think what you're describing requires the billionaire to be on Earth. And to just like cut off like the Mars program, just cut it. And the people who are there are stuck. Now, having them on Mars would be interesting because then if your project manager becomes an outlaw and they're like, let's make Mars a free country. It is then an interesting dilemma for those workers to be like, yes, Elon Muskia, the greatest country that's ever been, or to try and take down their boss who is responsible for their livelihood and for sending checks to their families back on Earth.
Right.
Yeah. I think that for me, so like the thing that I want to preserve is the like, or not want to, but I feel that the thing that I most latch onto in this nightmare story is the whole, we are not only stranded, but stranded for a very long time with no end in sight.
Yeah.
And so that is what I need to, like, that is the thing that I'm most trying to look for justification for here. Like, if these people are a group of terraformers on Mars and they are like one of the first crews that is up there, possibly the first crew that's up there, actually, because they do need to be cut off from other folks. And then Mars Inc. back home, you have Elon Tusk pulling the plug on the program. Then it's like, okay, yeah, so like, fine, because it takes 2 years to get up there. And it costs also like however many million dollars. Mm-hmm. And especially if it's not just that he pulls the plug, if Elon Tusk is arrested and his company is dissolved, then like the extensive economical apparatus that was keeping this all together and making it possible evaporates. Then it's, guys, we would love to help you. We don't have the $50 million.
Yeah, we just don't exist anymore. Sorry, bye. And on top of that, the multiple reuse re-entry vehicle that they took to get there was already sent back to get them supplies.
Yeah, the space bus went back already. Right. Yeah,
exactly.
And bad luck of bad luck, because this was a story filled with bad luck, that there was a slight shimmy problem and that ship burnt up on re-entry. So that's even gone. That ship doesn't exist anymore. We need to build a new one.
They can't commandeer the assets.
Yeah.
Like the government would have to send, like NASA would have to send a space bus of their own to Mars, a space bus that they don't have.
Right.
And
right.
So these people are just stuck there.
I like the idea of rather than it was it like exploded, that it was repossessed and it's now like stand in for like fake Putin, like it's like his pleasure cruiser or something.
Like then there needs to be something though about like it was repossessed because somebody filed the wrong forms. Like I think there needs to be an element of arbitrary bad luck is the thing that I want to bring in from like the original story, that there are all these things that are like, you know, this documentation expired, the storm that like broke their anchors, just like the government repossessed them because Elon Tusk owed $50 million in back taxes.
It's not enough. Yeah.
That's a little too linear for me. Yeah. Like I want to have like something else that is like God put his boot down.
And the other thing I think we need to solve is that this needs to be a world where like they could potentially get off Mars. Like the government could send a relief space bus,
okay,
a space taxi, if you will. But if they leave their work unfinished, then they don't get the thing that they're holding out for.
Right.
They signed up their lives away to go to Mars to do.
Basically, they're owed a small fortune, which is their futures, like livelihoods and their family's futures are tied up in. If they leave the surface of Mars, they are no longer owed what they're due.
That money. Right. Yeah. But it's going to take it's Elon Musk's company. It's going to take a decade for that bankruptcy case to go through arbitration and everything. So they got to hold out for a while.
Right.
I have to confess, there's something that feels a little bit lost to me if they have the ability to get off Mars, because the situation fucking dire that, like, why would they not? Even if they're coming back to Earth penniless, like, how could they choose not to hold? Like, why would they choose to hold out?
Because it's 30 years in the future, hopefully. So, like, it's like living in the frontier.
Yes.
Where it's dire, but it's not a red desert of nothing at this point.
Like, I think they would need to be at the stage of terraforming where it sucks, but it could suck forever.
It's not the Martian.
Yes. Yes. Like, they're at a point of a flywheel in the development where it's getting better very slowly and they don't need a resupply.
Is it in a place where it's conceivable that they could spend the rest of their lives
yes.
there
I
and
think
die
have
peacefully
to
of old age rather than
no.
like of something killed them?
Relative old age, I think, could make it to 60 or 70.
Exactly.
But like in the same way that like you die of old age in a zombie apocalypse, like probably a lot younger than you would if civilization was around.
Right. Like nobody's going to the old folks home, but you're also not dead in 2 weeks if you don't get that shipment of potatoes.
It's less like this slow, painful wasting away in a wilderness of space and red dust, and it's more like,
why did we bring
the
tigers?
Characters
have
more
care how good they are for the terraforming process. Whose idea was it to bring tigers to Mars? This is a terrible idea.
I mean, it was Teal and Tusk.
Yeah, absolutely.
That just tracks.
Yep.
But what were you going to say, Gabriel?
I was going to say, like, what is the mechanism then by which they could leave, though?
That's a good question. I think it's either Tef Kazos's company has a space bus, but they would have to sign over all of the equipment they have on Mars to them in order for the space bus to get sent. So there's like a sort of corporate acquisition option. I think they would also like, we could start this in kind of a Lost Island sort of place where they have to find the spot on the planet that they could send messages to now that, you know, their reentry vehicle is gone and whatever.
Sure. Cool. So then the space bus getting repossessed, does that may not be as much of an obstacle anymore?
No.
Yeah. Okay. I can roll
minor
with
obstacle.
That. Yeah. So where does this ultimately go? Does it end with them still on Mars, resigning themselves to their fate? Like, I have to admit, this is so colored by like how bad I feel for the people in the real story.
Yeah, seriously.
Like,
yeah.
I am like, you know,
I think the narrative version of it is that some of them choose to lose their financial stake and return home to their families. But there are a couple holdouts who are like, I'm just going to stay here.
Jesus. Yeah.
And probably there's big fights and there's like not a dust storm, another environmental hazard. They all have to pull together to survive.
Right.
But after that, like there's sort of a parting of the ways. And in a way that's even sadder than the group of them being stranded.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Oof. Oh boy.
And that's time.
Ay, ay, ay. Why is capitalism always the villain? Like, not all stories of capitalism is the villain, but like in every story that it's in, it's like always like, hello, your villain has arrived. My Lord.
Yeah, it's brutal.
What a harrowing story.
Yeah, it's just that opening image is just going to stick with me for a while of just like beachgoers, just like
looking,
gawking at these poor guys.
Devastating. Yeah.
Oh, let's go be quietly devastated and then try and make another comedy segment.
Then we'll come back.
Hello there, Zach Valenti, jumping into this episode with this brief reminder that we have an active Patreon page to support the production of No Bad Ideas and all the other crazy worlds we're building behind the scenes. To check that out, scope the sweet rewards we offer for monthly subscriptions, as well as how to sign up yourself. Head on over to nobadideaspodcast.com/support. Once more, that's nobadideaspodcast.com/support. If you already support the show, we so appreciate that. And regardless, thank you for listening. All right, let's get back to more No Bad Ideas.
Alrighty, folks, welcome back to No Bad Ideas. Zach, Sarah, are you ready to jump into a story of very petty vengeance?
Yes, absolutely.
A palate cleanser is sorely needed.
Before we proceed, I will say this upcoming story has a little bit of violence and gore in it. So just everybody set your phasers to the appropriate settings. And if you just heard me say those words and went, this is maybe not the story for me right now, or maybe ever, feel free to maybe skip this one. We'll be back next week with more bad ideas. But just wanted to like let everybody know about that before we jump on into this next idea. But with that out of the way, let's talk about this great little story that I found in the corners of Newsweek. Right off the press. And dear listeners, there's going to be a link in the episode description if you care to read along. And you know what? I'm going to skip the headline just because I think it'll be a little bit funnier to just go straight into the story.
Let's dive in.
All right. Let's dive in indeed. A man has been arrested after police found his severed finger at the scene of a crime in Maricopa, Arizona.
Yum.
Kevin Johnson is alleged to have slashed his neighbor's car tires after an argument before fleeing the scene with a missing finger and leaving a trail of blood leading to his front door.
Buddy.
Francesca Wyckoff told police she found the finger after discovering her vehicle had two slashed tires on one side on the morning of April 15.
Jesus.
Quote, literally been laughing all day because if I don't, yeah, I might cry. Wyckoff called KTV Key TV. It's pretty comical. You would think that if you're going to go to the hospital, especially if you just severed your finger, you would take said
finger. Gotta put him in ice, like immediately.
The former volunteer firefighter and emergency medical technician believes the fallen finger belongs to her neighbor. She and her husband had argued with him the night before, and the couple found a trail of blood leading to his house the following morning. The Maricopa Police Department later confirmed that Johnson had been arrested and identified as the owner of the finger. According to police spokesperson Hal Kuzer, who spoke to the Maricopa Monitor, he was charged with criminal damage, assault, threatening and intimidating behavior, and disorderly conduct stemming from both the slashed tires and the previous night's disagreement, the publication reported. Wyckoff and her husband reportedly went to a neighbor's home the night before, where a male neighbor joined them uninvited, AZ Central reported. He then became drunk and aggressive, pushing and threatening Wyckoff and her husband, and was asked to leave. The following morning, Wyckoff told police she found her car tires punctured. Quote, I don't find joy in anybody hurting themselves. However, karma has a good way of working itself out, she said.
Wow.
I have to admit, I completely just wanted to bring this idea in just for the like tableau of slash tires, finger, trail of blood leading to this gentleman's
right to
front
the door.
I think
maybe the most objectively bad idea that we've heard yet of just if you're gonna do a crime.
Right. Cover up the literal trail that you're leaving behind.
Maybe don't cut off your finger. But maybe also bring a pair of gloves in case you do. I don't know.
I'm so curious what he then did when he got into his house. Like, was the adrenaline too much and he hadn't realized, oh shit, I left my fingers back there?
No, I don't think that's possible. But let me start this 10-minute timer before we speculate further.
Oh, yeah, man. Wow.
Timer is now running.
Do you just put some ice on it, hold it over your head and start watching Netflix? What was he doing?
I think that is perhaps the case, like a case of that. I have made some decisions and now I need to go think about them. Like, you know, sits down in the dark to just like ponder his life choices.
Yikes.
All of the decisions that led to this moment. Yeah, it's a perfect comedy sketch. And I'm just trying to figure out how to
storyify it.
There's like the neighbor's route where this is one part of a longer ongoing feud.
Because, oh, you like this might be a man that after this incident is like, you cost me my finger. It's on. And these poor people are just like, we did no such thing, sir. I think you'll find that you cost yourself a finger.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Zach?
So I recently saw a show. No spoilers, but it has a similar moment in it. It's called Patriot. Uh-huh. It's on Amazon Prime. I thoroughly enjoyed it. This is somebody with a lot more training and expertise in a messy situation rather than somebody stumbling their way into jail.
But like if it's a spy, basically, is what you're saying. If this person is now no longer just a disgruntled neighbor, but is like a highly trained operative and they make this complete rookie mistake of cutting off a couple of their fingers while trying to slash a tire, like completely off the books, non-business actions, and then have to use their work expertise and resources to try and cover it up.
I guess that's what I was exploring, but I realized I'm missing the like bumbling fool aspect. And I wonder if we don't want to go more into the Monty Python direction of somebody being like, oh no, it's just a flesh wound. And they like, you just keep losing more parts of themselves as they try to get their petty revenge.
Knock.
Sir, we have your finger. Nope, not mine. Sir, are you sure?
Yeah,
nope, definitely.
Yep, definitely.
I'm wearing these surgical gloves for no reason at all.
Yeah.
The way to combine these things is for the couple to be spies, to be Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And someone has a vendetta against their house.
The Americans.
Yes, exactly. And they keep trying to like sabotage their lawn and shit, but because they're spies, there's all sorts of booby traps and...
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I can get on board with that.
And these two spies are like, dude, please stop. We have nothing against you. We are paid to assassinate people, not you. Please go away.
But also the blade barrier around our car needs to be there for a reason. Like you can't turn it off. So... please don't mess with our car.
Yeah, our car, we got a special edition and it has some capabilities that your normal Lexus does not have.
Okay.
I'm not sure how it escalates, but I like that as a premise.
So I think that it can't just be this guy. I think that it needs to be a movie about just how fucking dangerous it would be to actually have Mr. and Mrs. Smith or the Americans in one of these like small town suburban settings.
Yeah.
They keep running into these situations where someone like tries to pick up their mail for them and the thing explodes and they have to clean that up.
Yeah.
And some kids get a little bit too close to their driveway or something. And another one of the booby traps.
The laser
gets
sets
them.
Off and almost like fries the kid. Yeah.
Yeah. And they kind of realize like, wait a minute, all these things that are supposed to keep us safe are actually painting a like huge fucking bullseye on our back.
Yes.
Like sooner or later, someone's going to be like, what do all of these like grievous bodily injuries have in common? It's like they sure are happening in like close proximity to the Johnson residence. All of them.
No, I like that. That's interesting. And I guess like what sort of level of spy, because there's a world where this is Bob Parr and we're in the Incredibles and like there's supervillains abounding. There's another where it's the Americans. And then like when a booby trap goes off in their house, there's suddenly all this paranoia about like, is that something that we set? Have we been set up? Do we need to move? Awesome things.
Right.
I would be, I think, a little bit more interested in the version of it that is closer to the second one of those options personally. And I think that there needs to be this element of we have been in this stupid town for 70 years waiting for this drop that's coming on Friday. Mm-hmm. And now really these fucking bozos start getting injured on like Sunday. Like we just need to make it like 7 more days and then we can finally get out of town.
Oh, I love this.
And
movie,
so they're trying to be like we just need to get to Friday so that Deep Throat or whoever will show up and give us this thing. Not Deep Throat, but, you know, a Deep Throat like figure.
Yeah. And our contact will make the drop, etc.
Yeah.
So then why don't they slash do they just tie this buffoon up and put them in their basement for the week?
I think that probably at least one of the people that gets injured ends up tied up in their basement.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Hello, Mr. Peterson. We're really, really sorry about this. you just need to kind of like hang out here for like 4 days. After that, like, you know, you'll never see us again. We're really, really sorry. Let us know if we can bring you a blanket or something. Like, we're really sorry again. Also, for God's sakes, don't touch anything.
Anything.
We really mean it. Don't touch anything.
Looks like a pool table.
It's not a pool table. There's probably like at least two more moments where, you know, like a Boy Scout wanders into like their house to sell them, like, or a Girl Scout wanders in to sell them some cookies something.
Yeah.
And they just look at each other and it's like hard cut to like the basement door opening and she gets chucked tied up and lands next to Mr. Peterson.
I see. No. And so then at some point, the neighborhood watch figures out that there's this pattern and has to go looking.
Exactly, yeah.
And then the guy who is in the neighborhood watch is like this vigilante tough guy that no one believes. And so when he actually sees something, and he's cried wolf too many times.
Oh, so many times.
Right, yeah. Right.
He sees wolves everywhere.
And so everyone's, yeah, of course the Johnsons are spies. Sure, Larry.
Oh, Larry.
Yeah. So yeah, it's sort of a slow escalation of days of the week until we get to Friday. And then they have to be completely unobtrusive meeting their contact. And I assume that it goes well, but their house also burns down. That's where my head
probably
is at.
Yeah.
That could happen. Is there a chance that their contact was somebody they assumed was an obnoxious neighbor?
That's Mr. also
Peterson
very good.
Was the contact.
And so now they're in trouble because the contact didn't necessarily know who they were.
Mm-hmm.
And is now not available.
Wait a minute.
To
I love that. That's amazing.
To make the drop.
And right. So they think they've missed the drop. And Peterson thinks he's missed the drop.
Yeah. Peterson is fucking freaking out in the basement. Yeah. He's holy shit, sweating bullets.
Right. He thinks he's been caught by the, you know, international opposition to whatever the operation is.
Or like, you know, or kind of like, is this like some like Eyes Wide Shut, like sex cult thing? What is going on here?
Right.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's amazing.
This is phenomenal.
You have 40 seconds left. So how does it end and or what is it called?
Neighborhood Watch.
There we go. Done. Can we have H. John Benjamin play Peterson? That's all I want.
You got it. Consider it done.
And I guess it might have to end with, I don't know, I'm thinking now there may be like a burn after reading aspect where there's just like some like eye in the sky, eye of God in the sky, watching the whole thing go down, just being like, these fucking buffoons.
This is always good for that.
Yeah, that's true. That is time. So we're going to say that is the ending.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
We can solve the rival spy agency that is also in the town another time.
All right. I like this a lot. I think that this went to a very good, very violent place.
Well, it started in a fairly violent place already.
I know. Yeah, yes. So. It's true. Oh my God. But no, applause, guys. Very nicely done.
Hey, thanks for that idea. What the hell?
I know.
Gorgeous. Wow.
Sometimes you just need to follow the trail of blood and see what the bad idea is.
I wonder, were they able to reattach the finger?
I don't know. I was not able to find any recording that
hopefully
gave us a... Yes. We hope that this poor person who maybe
slashed the tires and maybe served it. Yeah.
Payback, yeah. Was able to get through this without any truly lasting harm.
And if they did, it sounds like they may have learned their lesson.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Jennifer Schneider, Rena Sarame, and Rebecca Allen. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.